listener production.
On today's edition of Footy Talk, Nick Riewoldt tees off on the MRO. Is it real to be concerned about Brisbane and Collingwood's 0-2 start? And Rui gives us his take on the Tasmania Devils launch. That's all up next on Footy Talk. This is Footy Talk, your place for the latest news, interviews, analysis from the world of AFL. And every Tuesday, we look to set the agenda and analyse the biggest topics of the week. I'm joined by Nick Riewoldt, as we will be every Tuesday over in the States. G'day, Rui. I saw you had a good weekend, a wedding, some golf at Pebble Beach. You just continue to live the life over there.
It was a good weekend. You've been to Carmel.
I have.
Unbelievable, that place. Yeah. Yeah, it's absolutely stunning. So, yeah, good weekend. Mate, busy weekend, but not as busy as you. You were everywhere. Every time I turned on the telly in the bar in Carmel, there was Joey, his big head, doing calling games, hosting games, doing analysis shows. You're turning into the absolute just front and centre media man in the footy world.
I did have a busy weekend, Rui, but I've had a pretty quiet summer, so time to get back into it and get to work. So that was good. Hey, let's straight off the top. We're going to look to do a thought of the week. What's your thought of the week off the back of the footy we saw?
Well, we touched on it a little bit last week in response to the Jimmy Webster suspension for 7 weeks, which is what everyone was asking for, and we understood that that's what it was going to be because we have to protect the head. But then we also asked in the same breath for consistency that if we are going to protect the head, let's make sure that if you punch someone in the face or you headbutt someone, that we treat that seriously. Well, fast forward a week and we've got guys punching people in the face and headbutting people in the face, getting a 1 week suspension, the same for someone that grazed someone in the leg in James Sicily, which we'll get into because he probably needs to pull his head in as well. But how we can have the seriousness and the concentration on the head is sacrosanct and we're going to protect it at all costs and then end up in the situation we have with the MRO findings from this week, it absolutely boggles my mind. I don't know what they're doing up there at head office.
So what would be your solution then? Which is the unfair version? Do you think that the boys Redmond and James Harms for their headbutt and strike should get more than 1 week?
Absolutely. If we're treating the head seriously, it's no more intentional and deliberate with what Jimmy Webster did. There's obviously just more force involved, but you could argue that it's less of a football action than tucking in for a bump. And this isn't about, you know, trying to lessen the suspension of Jimmy Webster. He got his right whack. But let's start giving 2 and 3 weeks for blokes that throw punches at guys' faces or dish out headbutts, particularly if we're going to be giving a week for a kick like James Sicily's, which from all reports, Andy McGrath didn't even feel. So I think we've got the balance wrong there. We got it right at the high end, but the lower end, we've got to up the punishment if we're serious about it.
Yeah, not a bad point. I think there's definitely a James Sicily tax attached to him now. I think it's a bit like Toby Green all those years ago where because it's him, they just up it a little bit and make it like it's a bigger thing than his. I agree with you. There was hardly anything in that kick. In some ways, it was quite comical. And then he took on 13 bombers himself. But maybe more to the point about his leadership. If you're a mentor of his, that's now his third suspension in 11 games as captain of a rebuilding football team. What would your advice be to James Sicily?
Well, you just can't do it. The best ability is availability.
What if he can't help it? Captain, what if he can't help it?
Well, what do you mean?
Well, we've got teammates that just couldn't help it on the field. They just got themselves in situations where they just didn't have the composure to just be able to say, I've got to stay out of this or can't get involved.
Maybe you shouldn't be skipper because you can't be missing 3 games out of every 10 because you can't control it. Now, I love the fact that I love the way that he plays, that he plays on the edge and that he walks that line. But if you don't have the composure and the capacity to rein it in when you need to and be out there for your team consistently, well, then maybe he's not the guy. What was your takeaway, Joey, from the weekend?
My takeaway is zipping two, it's real. It's a real thing, Roo. The old she'll be right if you start zipping two. It doesn't really, it's something to be nervous about because, you know, I like history and you like looking at the numbers. Since 2000, 114 teams have started zipping two. Only 20 have gone on to play finals. That's less than on average one a season. Mm. Now, granted, most of the teams that start zipping two are zipping two because they're shit teams. They were never going to play finals. But there is always good teams that we just think she'll be right. And you only have to go back to last year. We had Zip and Two, the Fremantle Dockers, who'd come off that great year in 2022 where they spiked and hadn't won a final and everyone thought she'll be right.
Yep.
Geelong, the reigning premiers, started Zip and Two. There was a lot of talk even from internally. She'll be right. It's just a slow start. We'll be fine. And the Western Bulldogs were another team that started Zip and Two. All three of them missed the finals last year and no one would have thought that at round two. The year before that, just quickly in 2022, I'll just do the same thing. Giants, Port Adelaide, Essendon and the Bulldogs had all played finals the year before. Only the Bulldogs, all those teams started zipping too. Only the Bulldogs made finals. They just limped in and that was it for them. So right now, we'll get to Collingwood and Brisbane because they've been the big story. But it's a massive weekend for some other teams that have expectations to play finals. And none more so than our mob, St Kilda, Rui. Big expectations. If they lose Thursday night to Collingwood, they're zipping too. The Adelaide Crows, they're expected to spike this year. They play Geelong. Big chance for them if they don't win to go zipping too, obviously. And the Western Bulldogs is the other one who should take care of business in Ballarat against the Gold Coast Suns. But history says it's unlikely that all these teams, well, it's impossible, that all these teams will make finals. So let's get into Brisbane and Collingwood because there is an attitude at the moment, she'll be right. They'll find their groove. They'll be okay. And they might. They are both good teams. We know that. And their best is as good as anyone's in the competition. We saw that last year. But it's a new season and it doesn't always pan out that way. So it's going to be fascinating to see how it unfolds as the year goes on.
Who are you more worried about then? Because I think when you look at it, it's probably two situations associated with both teams, right? So if you're looking at Brisbane's, I've been worried about them because of the words that have been coming out. So selfish was a word that got spoken about internally. Lachie Neal said we were selfish defensively. That there's clearly a lack of resilience when the tide is turning against them. So I just wonder, and we experienced something pretty similar coming off the back of 2010 and the heartbreak of losing a tight or a drawn and then the replay. Is there a point where the scars are real and they start to affect the way you approach the game? And it's early, I know, but the signs were there early for us in 2011 where we started really poorly. We were able to manage and just scrape in 2011, but we were never going to do any real damage. So, look, I'm less worried about Collingwood because they've got theirs.
That's what I was going to say.
They won one. They've got that. They've got it. They've got that forever. And if all those guys walk away only having won one, well, then guess what? I'd take it.
Yeah.
So I'm less worried about those guys. Yeah, maybe they've got full bellies. They're still going to have a premiership for the rest of their lives. So for me, Brisbane is the real watch.
Yeah. Hey, we joked. If we had a one in 2010, Rui, there's no way I was coming back in the same shape in 2011 as I was if I had the medal. Just human nature. You're right. I completely agree with everything you've said there because you're right. Collingwood have won it. Brisbane are the team that are still trying to chase it. And this is now meant to be their sixth year at the pointy end. And we know it did. At some point, climbing the mountain just got that little bit too difficult. And it was subconscious. It wasn't deliberate. We didn't deliberately sort of check out. No. It just became the little one percenters and the attention to detail became too hard. And that's a reason why no team in the last 10 years has gone back to a grand final after losing it. It is hard. It's an even competition. And I do think there are some signs there with Brisbane. Premiership contenders don't concede a run of 8 goals in a game. They've done it 2 weeks in a row. What is that? That's mental. They're going to start to look at each other and point fingers. You mentioned that they did it the week before. So Brisbane are the ones for me that I'm more worried about. Now, they've got the bye, so they get the chance to regroup, but then they play Collingwood at the Gabba the week after Easter Thursday.
Do they have the leaders, Joey? Do they have the leaders within that group and within the sort of the coach's box to be able to turn it around?
Well, I'm sure they do, and it's hard for us to know exactly how good the leaders are. I mean, they're great players like Harris Andrews and Lachie Neal are two of the best in their roles in the competition. The question for Brisbane, and I've still been critical of it, is it still looks to me in any given situation, they don't exactly know what they need to do. Whether it's to try and control the ball for a little bit, whether it's to close out a game, whether it's stop a run on. A team that's been at the top for 5 years in a row should know that automatically. They should just go into the mode out on the field themselves. They still get confused. They still don't get it right and they can't get the job done. So they're a big watch, but all the teams that start 0-2 are a big watch, Rui, because the fact is maybe one, maybe two will make the finals from there, but it's so difficult. It's going to be a fascinating watch. Hey, let's get into the other big news of the last 24 hours, to be fair, and this is close to your heart. It's the Tasmania Football Club was announced, the Tasmania Devils. It has been launched officially. Exciting times. Tell us a little bit about what you know and how exciting it is from your perspective.
Yeah, look, I was an onlooker like everyone yesterday without any inside knowledge as to what the jumper was going to look like, what the logo or the emblem was going to look like. And look, I thought it hit the mark absolutely perfectly. I think the logo, the devil, is awesome. I think it's going to resonate with young fans of the game. It looks fierce. It's obviously an iconic Tasmanian animal. So I think that's all going to play really well. I've heard a little bit of criticism about the jumper, which I just can't wrap my head around, to be honest, because it's the traditional Tassie football jumper. So I think Robbo was one in particular that said he wanted more. He wanted it to be more dynamic. Does that, like, it's the Tassie jumper? Does that mean we want Richmond to go out and be more dynamic with their jumper now moving forward? I mean, I thought it was ridiculous.
Collingwood need to change their black and white.
all of the traditional footy jumpers that have stood the test of time, they are that way for a reason, and that's the history associated with them. And the Tassie jumper is exactly the same. You can get dynamic when it comes time for retro round or whatever, away strips or clash strips or whatever it is. That's the time to be dynamic. But I thought the colour palette, the jumper, the logo, they were all 10 out of 10 for me. So great job to the organising committee and everyone involved. And 67,000 members as of this morning, Melbourne time, which isn't just a get online and tick the box. There's a commercial transaction that you got to pay money, and so it is that is real, that is tangible. So it's been embraced clearly, which is great to see.
Obviously, stadium and stadia is sort of now a bit more in your wheelhouse with the work you're doing. Are you slightly nervous about the conversations? And I haven't kept up to date too much with it because I sort of think it's still a bit too far away. But with the politics behind it and the stadium deal and these conversations, are you slightly nervous about where that's all at?
The one variable at the moment is the upcoming Tassie election. That's probably the one, because there is not tripartisan support in Tasmania at the moment. I know the Labor government led by Rebecca White has been a little bit more anti in their desire for a stadium to be built. Their philosophy is more prove it and then build the stadium rather than build it and they will come. So that's probably the only variable. But look, I think it's a no-brainer. I think to hit the ground running, all the questions around retention, around captivating that fan base is going to be contingent on a stadium from day one. So I think it'll get up and I think it'll get done.
Yeah, and I think we can dispel the myth too that players won't want to play there. I went down to Hobart last week, really, for the Jack Jumpers. I call it the Jackies game, and Hobart's coming along in leaps and bounds. Like, it is a beautiful little town. There's great little restaurants and cafes and bars, and I'm sure the players will love eventually living down there. And it's a football state. I'd rather live in a football state than somewhere where you're on, page 7 of the paper to try and find an article about the footy. So, exciting times. Well done.
It's the Geelong model. So Geelong's sort of off-Broadway as a city, but you build a wonderful culture and people want to play there. So Geelong's a model.
Yeah, very, very good. Hey, we'll take a break. After this, we'll get through some of the other big talking points out of the weekend's footy. And looking ahead, of course, you're listening to Footy Talk. If you do have a question for Rui or myself, get on Instagram, footytalk_pod, or on TikTok at footytalkpod. You're listening to Footy Talk. If you're listening on Spotify, hit the bell to be notified when we drop a new episode. I'm here with Nick Riewoldt. Rui, let's get into a bit of real talk, shit talk, and discuss some of the other talking points around footy at the moment. Lee Matthews came up with the chat a couple of days ago that the Sydney Swans are a better team without Buddy, but the 2023 version of Buddy.
Yeah, I learned a good lesson early, and that was always agree with everything that Lee Matthews said, and you rarely get criticised. But he's spot on again, Joey, with this one, and it's not a slide on Buddy Franklin at all. Of course, there comes a point in every player's career when the team is better off without you, and that's just because you've gotten old and slow and not the version of yourself that you were. So, yeah, I think they probably are, not just because of Buddy's ability, which wasn't what it was. It was still solid, but it wasn't what it was when he was at his peak. But because of what it does to the rest of the team, they funneled so much ball through him because they were so buddy conscious that they didn't always take the right option. So I think a combination of his sort of lessened ability and a more balanced approach for the team. So Lethal was spot on that with that one. That one's real talk. Hey, what about you, Joey?
To be fair, though, just quickly, St Kilda thought that about when they let you go, Nick Greenwald. They thought they'd be better off without Rui, and that didn't quite work out at the club in that situation.
That's fair. Thank you, Joey. Good point. Good point. Yeah, but I still think I can play. So, ridiculous. Hey, Freo, 1 year contract extension for Justin Longmuir. Are Freo just hedging their bets? What's a 1 year extension going
to
do?
Yeah, that's shit talk. I think that we've got to get past that. There's got to be like a black and white way to do contracts these days. I remember the talk last year about Ken Hinckley. Oh, you can't let a coach out a year without a contract. That's bad for them. And Port Adelaide went on a 13-game winning streak. I think it's smart business. It's common sense, isn't it? You give Justin Longmuir 24 months to see where the club is at. Are they going in the right direction and playing finals? And if not, then you make a decision in 24 months. So I think it's smart anyway. And you listen to Justin Longmuir. He basically says, because he's negotiating his own contracts now, it's really a two-year contract because he renegotiated his financial situation for this season. So I think they took out a clause, which we know the coaches these days sometimes only get a six-month payout. So I think he's sort of secured this year and he's got an extra year. So you look at it as a two-year contract, which I think for where Fremantle are at, makes perfect sense. Hey, one back at you. Andrew Dillon said this one. He thinks that one of the Scott brothers is the best person to coach the Tassie team that we're talking about earlier. Shit talk or real talk?
I'm going to hedge and I'm going to say it's half real, half shit. I think if you can get Chris Scott, then absolutely he's the best man for the job because, I mean, I think he's been one of the great coaches of the modern era. You know, he's always had his team there competing for premierships. That's not a slight on Brad. I just don't think Brad's got the same resume as a coach as Chris. So, yeah, half real, half shit, that one from Deals. If they could get Chris Scott, that would be a coup to join. We assume Brendan Gale as the CEO of Tassie FC. Joey, this actually is probably a bit more in my wheelhouse, Joey, but I'll ask you about the key forwards. Jesse Hogan, he started the year on fire. Is he a legit shot at winning the Coleman?
Well, I mentioned last week there'll be about five or six of these key forwards that will kick 60-plus goals this year. It will be. And Jesse Hogan, absolutely, this is real talk. He can win the Coleman. He's already kicked 10 goals. He is in peak career best form. They play the West Coast Eagles this week, Roo. Oh. He could have a nice little gap on the competition. His competition for the Coleman after three rounds. So I think from there, the way that the Giants are moving the footy, you should see the way they go from the back half to the forward half, running in waves. They're getting looks everywhere. I mean, Callum Brown looks like a Coleman medal contender, Rui. That's how well the ball supply is going into the forward line. Not to a knock on Callum. He's a very good player, but he came out from Ireland only a few years ago. But yeah, I think it's real. I think Jesse Hogan absolutely could win the Coleman medal, and Giants look like they are going to be the team to beat. From what I've seen from a very small sample size, hey, very good show from you today, Rui. I'll let you get back to work. Always appreciate your time. This has been Footy Talk. If you do want to get involved, send us a message on Instagram tomorrow. Well, this is a good-looking crew. David Zaharakis, Abby Holmes, not so much Jack Heverin, but they'll have a look at the players' point of view. Until then, we'll see you tomorrow.
See you next Tuesday, Lee.
Listener.